You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, we answer a Wisconsin question about the history of the Wisconsin Dells and find out how it came to be known as the water park capital of the world. Now, this year's race for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin is underway, with Republican Ron Johnson officially seeking re-election against a group of Democratic challengers. While Democratic Governor Tony Evers' re-election bid could soon heat up, with a few more Republican opponents considering getting into the mix. We're checking in on the latest developments in Wisconsin's midterm elections on the ballot this fall, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you surprised Senator Ron Johnson decided to run for a third term? Are you glad he is, or do you think it's time for a change? What do you think about the pool of Democrats running against him? How about the race for governor? What are you looking for there? And in either or both races, what issues do you want to hear the candidates talking about? What do they need to say or do to earn your vote? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or is the D or R in front of their name enough for you? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Craig Gilbert is a political writer and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to Central Time.
It's nice to be with you.
Well, on Sunday, Ron Johnson formally announced that he will seek re-election for a third term. He'd made a pledge in 2016 to only go for two. He addressed why he decided to run again during an interview this week with WISN in Milwaukee. Here's a listen.
I have been for the last 11 years, and this reason I ran in 2010, I was concerned about the direction of our country. And I think we all thought that in 2016, when we finally had a president and we had the House and the Senate, we could turn the ship state around and, we would put it on the right course for a long period of time. I don't think any of us anticipated Democrats completely taking control of government.
All right, Craig, a big announcement, an important announcement in this race. Was anybody really surprised that he said he was going for it?
No, nor do I think it was shocking that Democrats took control of the government in 2020, as if that was never going to be a real possibility. I mean, this happens all the time in politics. Power shifts. That's what happened in 2020. And none of us, I think, in the political world are very surprised that Ron Johnson is going to seek a third term, even though he did say he would only serve two terms.
Is that something voters worry about if you're going to support a Republican for Senate? Are you going to go back and say, yeah, but you said only two, man?
Probably not a lot of voters, just because we are pretty polarized and people, tend to line up for their side. And the universe of voters whose votes are actually in play is not huge to begin with. And then within that pool of voters, the number of people that for whom this is going to be the deciding issue is probably small.
You recently wrote a piece, Craig, saying that Senator Johnson is maybe one of the most vulnerable incumbent senators in the country. His popularity is low, and he's probably a favorite to win anyway. Why is that?
Well, to say he's one of the most vulnerable incumbents in the Senate is not a big statement, because there just aren't that many vulnerable incumbents. One reason is that, we live in a world where blue states elect Democratic senators, red states elect Republican senators, and then the short list of purple states elect senators from both parties. He's, one of very few senators, Republican senators, from a state that Joe Biden carried in 2020. And he's going to be the only Republican senator on the ballot in 2022 in a state that voted Democratic for president in 2020. So, kind of by definition, he's in sort of a vulnerable zone. And then when you add into that the fact that his own polling numbers aren't great, he is objectively vulnerable, I think. But at the same time, the political climate could be so favorable to him. I mean, it's always favorable to the out. I mean, it's almost always favorable to the out party in a midterm election. And you've got a Democratic president with low approval ratings. That makes it a very kind of challenging environment for Democrats. And so it's kind of hard to lose a race in this world under these conditions when you're an incumbent senator in the party that's out of power.
We've got four main candidates so far on the Democratic side of things. What are you seeing for those candidates as they try to distinguish themselves for Democrats as the best option to take on Ron Johnson?
Well, you know, there are going to be some policy differences, not big ones and not a lot of them in this race. But, you know, I think what happens in a situation like this is a lot of the internal debate going on in this race is going to be about, you know, who can beat Ron Johnson. I mean, that's the sort of motivating, you know, thing for a lot of Democratic activists. And that's a powerful message if you can win that argument within the Democratic primary. So you're going to see all the leading Democratic candidates kind of tailor those arguments around their own particular backgrounds. And they're going to argue, you know, a person with my background has the right background to defeat Ron Johnson. They're going to argue about their own electoral track records, where they come from in the state, their ability to put together certain coalitions. So it becomes kind of a political argument, almost a horse race argument, alongside all the kind of philosophical arguments that sometimes take place in a primary.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at our big statewide races in Wisconsin in 2022, Senate and governor. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Wherever you stand, are you hopeful that your candidate has a shot at winning? Do you have an important issue on your mind this year that you'll weigh as you vote in a primary, a Republican primary, say, for governor, a Democratic primary for U.S. Senate? What do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear the media asking candidates about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Whichever side you're on, if you're a Democrat, are you excited at the option of working against Ron Johnson? If you're a Republican, how about the chance to unseat Governor Evers? 800-642-1234 is the number. Craig, the race for governor now, flipping things around, Democratic incumbent, one main challenger on the Republican side, but thoughts that other folks might get in there. What are you seeing on the Republican side of things?
Yeah, so the decision by Senator Johnson to run for re-election kind of took the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate off the table for anybody else. And so you have some ambitious Republicans out there that want to run for statewide office. The Senate is no longer an option, so they're looking at the governor's race. There are two names that are out there are Kevin Nicholson, who lost a primary for the U.S. Senate in 2018, and Eric Hovde, who lost a U.S. Senate primary, a Republican primary in 2012. So, you know, it looks like we're going to have a contested Republican primary. That wasn't always clear that it was going to be the case. I think it's too early to know how competitive it will be and what, you know, the fault lines are going to be in a Republican primary. In this day and age, there's always sort of the potential to have a Republican primary kind of break down along sort of pro-Trump and less pro-Trump lines. We don't know if that's going to be the case this time around, but we've certainly seen a pattern in Republican primaries in recent cycles of a candidate who dominates in the suburban Southeast around Milwaukee and a candidate who does better in the rest of the state, which are the same places where Donald Trump did well, for example, in losing the Wisconsin primary in 2016. That's become a familiar kind of geographic fault line in Republican primaries. And so one scenario is a replay of that.
And looking at it through the eyes of Governor Evers now running for re-election, we heard Ron Johnson vulnerable but still has a good shot. What is your read so far on Governor Evers?
Well, he's certainly vulnerable with respect, you know, to the political climate. His polling numbers have been a little bit better than Ron Johnson's. Not a lot better, but they were a lot better in the first 2 years of his term when he was doing really well with independents, and he wasn't doing as badly with Republican voters as Democrats typically do. I think he was boosted in the earlier phases of the pandemic. His numbers have sort of come back down and settled back down into sort of where you would expect them to be in a polarized, evenly divided state like this, where he's sort of closer to 50-50 now. He's not really underwater like Ron Johnson, but he's, you know, he's in a gray zone, but he faces real peril from the political environment. If you look at the history of campaigns for governor in Wisconsin, the last eight races for governor have been won by the party that's not in the White House. So the party of the president has lost the last eight races for governor. That's kind of a daunting or chilling trend, I would say, for Governor Evers. And so that's his challenge, is sort of bucking that trend. There's a lot of reasons for that trend, but they all have to do kind of with the dynamics of midterms and how they tend to favor the party out of power. Those voters are more motivated. And if the public is frustrated by conditions in the country, including the pandemic, including inflation, they tend to take it out on the president's party.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Louis is with us in Oconto. Louis, hi.
Hi. I really like the Democrats running for the seat against Ron Johnson, and especially Tom Nelson. Want to give a shout out to him. Boy, that guy, he has a lot of energy. I believe that he's the only candidate so far that has met with people in every single county in Wisconsin. And I remember when he was starting out, walking the streets of Kokona, meeting the people door to door. I mean, the guy has been really up on the issue. So just wanted to say that.
Louis, thanks for the call. Craig, does that kind of old-fashioned politicking, hitting the streets in every county, is that something that you think still makes a difference?
You know, it's an open question. I've actually gone door-to-door with Tom Nelson in Kaukauna many years ago in one of his legislative races. And he does have an interesting electoral history. I mean, he's represented areas that are not particularly blue. You know, that we've seen a lot of campaigns that have emphasized kind of, you know, shoe leather, grassroots, door-to-door, personal contact. That can be effective, but by itself, it's not always effective. And so, you know, if you're not somebody who starts out with statewide name recognition, it's hard to build that name recognition without either being at the center of the news or spending a lot of money on television.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert about re-election bids for Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Governor Evers has done enough to be re-elected? What do you think of Senator Ron Johnson's performance in the U.S. Senate? Should he get a third term? Call 800-642-1234. Are there other names you'd like to see in a race? Tommy Thompson? 800-642-1234. That's come up. I don't know how seriously. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us today previewing Wisconsin's races for governor and U.S. Senate. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rose is with us now in Menominee Falls. Rose, hi.
Hi there. I just heard Craig Gilbert talk about the off-year elections, which we've all heard about, and how the party who's not in power has a greater chance of winning, et cetera. And I have to tell you, as an active VAT volunteer campaigner for Democrats primarily, I find that, I know it's fact, but I find it very discouraging. And when I try and campaign for candidates, when you hear that over and over again, it just makes you feel like it's not worth it. So why bother? Because this is, and I get it. It's fact that all these years, you know, and most mm-hmm. of the years is that it happens that way. But the more we hear that, the harder it makes it.
Interesting. Rose, thanks for that call. Craig, trends don't vote, of course, people do. But also, Rose, worried, I think maybe it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if you point out that trend and voters hear that trend. They might think, as Rose worries, why bother?
Well, I think that's sort of related to the phenomenon of, you know, you get into a campaign season and people start seeing a lot of opinion polls and they're showing a trend. They're showing one candidate ahead and one candidate behind. And the supporters of the trailing candidate always have that fear that their own supporters are going to get discouraged by this sort of perception that, you know, that they're going to lose the campaign. I mean, one thing I would say about that is that, you know, first of all, none of this stuff is determined. Surprises and upsets happen all the time. If it were true that being perceived as the underdog were fatal to a campaign, then underdogs would never win. I mean, if you go back to 2016 in Wisconsin, you know, there was this pretty universal perception that Donald Trump was going to lose that the state of Wisconsin for president. Certainly every poll suggested that, just like, you know, when Ron Johnson ran in 2010 and 2016, a lot of the polling sort of had him trailing Russ Feingold in those races. So I think we've seen that while I totally understand the concern, and by no means do I think that the coverage by the media of these races should be dominated by, you know, this kind of discussion and dominated by questions about who might win or who might not win. And I think we've seen time and time again that that's not deterministic, that people, you know, upsets happen, underdogs win. And, you know, historical patterns aren't ironclad. So it's really, I think, up to the candidates and the parties to kind of mobilize and motivate their supporters. If they're mobilized and motivated around the issues and around the candidates, they will come out to vote.
Thanks for that call, Rose. We'll go next to Terry in La Crosse. Terry, hi.
Hi. I would like to make a comment about Ron Johnson. I used to be a strong supporter of Ron Johnson's as a healthcare provider in the state of Wisconsin. I believed in him the first two times that he ran. And my comment about him now is that I will not vote for him. I feel that he turned his back and betrayed the healthcare providers of the state of Wisconsin. His comments about vaccinations are appalling. He has no understanding of science. He's a dangerous man. I also believe that he has been drinking Donald Trump's Kool-Aid far too long.
Terry, thanks for the call. Craig, Terry says she had voted for Senator Johnson in the past, worried his comments on the pandemic, obviously getting a lot of attention, his association with former President Trump. Do you see these as factors, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for one thing, you know, they are probably mobilizing for the, you know, kind of pro-Trump base voters in the Republican Party. You know, he could have some success mobilizing those voters as a result of, you know, being increasingly in tune with the Trump message and also things he's been saying about the pandemic. On the other hand, the risk for him is alienating some of those people in the middle, some of whom may have voted for him in the past. There is a subset of Republican voters and independent, maybe conservative independents who have had big qualms about Donald Trump. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether Ron Johnson's voting patterns look like they did when he ran last time, when he actually, you know, outperformed Donald Trump in 2016 in southeastern Wisconsin, for example, among suburban voters. This time around, the polling suggests, you know, there are some issues out there. When Marquette did a poll in October and asked people whether they trusted Ron Johnson as a source of information about coronavirus, the majority of registered voters said no. What was more interesting about that was even something like a third of Republican voters said no. Now, some of those voters, or maybe most of those voters, may end up voting for Ron Johnson anyway because they're Republicans, but it does suggest that, you know, some of his rhetoric on this issue does come at a cost for some voters.
Thanks for the call, Terry. We'll go to David now in Wisconsin Dells. David, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, David?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about Governor Evers. You know, I was pretty disappointed that when we had the rioting in Wisconsin, especially in Kenosha, The local legislature there tried to get extra help or added help from him specifically, and he denied it. And I think that was a mistake. I mean, look what happened with the Rittenhouse, all that crap. That could have been avoided. So, I don't know.
I got you. Dave, we're just about out of time, but this is an issue that Republicans are raising, Craig, that the governor had sent some National Guard troops. They say not enough overall his handling of riots and protests.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting issue. I mean, whether it'll be a front and center issue by the time the election rolls around, given the passage of time, I don't know. I mean, I will say one thing about this interesting and sort of hard to assess about the Evers situation is that because we have divided government, because he's been so limited in his ability to implement an agenda because the Republicans have a lock on the legislature, you just don't have the same record to evaluate him on, for example, that Republican and Democratic voters did with Scott Walker when he had control and he could actually leave his policy imprint on the state. So that's a little bit of an X factor in the governor's race.
David, thanks for that call. One more X factor in just half a minute, Craig. Tommy Thompson, he was asked. He didn't rule it out. I don't know that there's any serious consideration of a new Tommy Thompson bid for governor. Quick thoughts?
Formidable politician with an incredible electoral history. I will say that the way he governed and the way he ran is harder to do today than it was then.
Because
for obvious reasons, we're a much more divided and polarized and partisan state, and that really wasn't his style. It's a lot harder to do today, and it would present certain challenges even within his own party. If he did run, I don't expect him to run. I have a tremendous amount of respect for his political skills and his history, but it would be a surprise if he ran. It would be a surprise if he could win a nomination, I think.
Craig, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Absolutely.
That's Craig Gilbert, political writer and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was with us today with a look at the 2022 races for governor and for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. Follow our latest reporting on those races all year long, pretty much, over at WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, healthcare can be a tough job in normal times. The last couple of years have not been normal times. Find out about the mental health challenges facing providers and how they're dealing with them. That's tomorrow here on the Ideas Network. Are you trying something new in your cooking this year? Let us know. That's the subject tomorrow of this week's edition of Food Friday. We want to hear from you during the show, and you can get started right now. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Some examples. Are you planning to try something new in the oven, on the stove, on the grill? A new style of cooking or reaching out to a different food tradition from around the globe? Maybe trying a new ingredient, recipe, or cookbook? Or maybe just trying to cook more? Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Me, with kids moved out now to college, we are relearning the stuff that we used to like that the kids weren't always as excited about. Looking forward to hearing your stories tomorrow on Food Friday. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It might be cold outside, but we recently got a question that brought us right back to summer. Alexi wrote into WPR's Why Wisconsin project asking when Wisconsin Dells and the Wisconsin Dells tourism area was built. That got us wondering about the history of the Dells and how it became to be the water park and resort town it is today. And it also got us curious about your memories of the Dells. Rob Cunningham lives in Madison now, but he grew up there in the Dells. His family had a small motel, and he remembers when two pilots stayed with him in the 1970s.
And they'd stay there for the summer and work as tour pilots for the helicopters. And my brother and I used to like to go down and watch those helicopters take off and land. And one day, when they were kind of slow, one of the pilots asked us if we wanted to go up for a ride. And so we did. which I think my parents had no idea that we did that. And I do know that they had mentioned we shouldn't get in cars with people that we didn't know, but I don't think they ever mentioned a helicopter. So we probably thought we were fine.
We want to hear your Dell's memories at 800-642-1234. Is there a favorite memory that sticks out to you? Did you grow up there? Did you go there for vacations? Maybe growing up, continue a tradition with your family? You have a favorite water park or water slide? Have you worked there? What's it like from that side of the slide? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dave Rambo is the site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum, a historical site in Wisconsin Dells. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Wonderful day out here today.
Excellent. Well, let's go back to the early days of European settlement. I understand the city wasn't originally called Wisconsin Dells. Why not?
Yeah. Well, it's a long story, of course, as most stories are. The man who founded the city and was responsible for putting it here was a man named Byron Kilbourn, who was a railroad mogul. And he was not a modest man. So he founded this city in 1857 and named it after himself, Kilbourn City. And it stayed that way until 1931 when, you know, tourism traffic, people were looking for Wisconsin Dells. They weren't looking for Kilbourn City. So it just made it a little easier for them to find.
Can you talk about what it is? Wisconsin has a lot of great scenery. What was it about the Dells that really captured people and made them want to take the trip there by rail or boat or car?
Well, we have this incredible, otherworldly-looking riverbanks, and it's sand rock that started as, you know, sand on the floor of an inland sea and has been compacted over hundreds of thousands of years. And it's just fantastic. For many, many years, the Ho-Chunk were here, and they have... They still remain here, and they gather here oftentimes to kind of revitalize themselves spiritually and mentally and emotionally. So it was a place of peace. This was really, really well known, but the original city of the Wisconsin Dells, or then known Kilbourn City, was mainly a little logging and lumbering town, and it took quite a while for it to develop into, you know, what we know it as today.
When did we first start to see this rise in tourism associated with the Dells?
Well, the first we know of is it came from kind of one man's aha moment. The fellow was named Leroy Gates, and he was a river pilot. He began as a lumber raft person. He guided those bundled wooden planks, you know, the logs from the rivers up north through the tricky waters of the Dells to go down to market. And he began to make show of his skills. He had a top hat and a coat, and he had the foresight to kind of show how he could live off the river beyond rafting. In 1857, he turned his knowledge of the waterway into a business, showing visitors the scenery of the Dells by rowboat. And he had two or three passengers, and he would go up and down. And oftentimes I've been told he made up a lot of fanciful stories, you know, as it went. So that began, you know, the scenic river tours. And by the 1870s, daily excursions were offered to visitors, mostly still by rowboats. But by 1871, steamboats came in here. And today, I think it's a fleet of around 22 steel launches that still give those same tours.
Talking to Dave Rambo, site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum, a historical site in Wisconsin Dells. We're answering a Why Wisconsin question about why Wisconsin Dells became what it is, the tourist history of the community that brings people in from so far and wide. You can join in with your questions or your memories at 800-642-1234, whether you grew up there or lived there at some point, have fond memories of vacationing there, fond or otherwise memories of working there at some point. Love to hear those too at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We heard from Kristen Day, who lives in Hartford, spends her weekends as a seasonal camper in the Dells with her husband. Kristen says her childhood camping memories inspired her to keep camping there to this day.
when I was a kid, I grew up camping every weekend at the Dells. My family had a camper at a campground. So did my cousins. So we had built-in friends. And we would go up there every weekend to the Dells and just be there. And it's such a different environment. I know it's touristy and there's a lot that goes on. But for me, it's the nature, it's the river, it's the history, all of those things that kind of make it Old Dells.
Yeah, and it is. There's a lot of the tourist things there now. We're going to get into those in a bit. But people like Kristen certainly still, Dave, go there for the scenery.
Yeah, it's an authentic experience. And I'm right downtown here on this bustling Broadway, which is our main street. And just a block or two away on the river, it's nice and calm and peaceful. You know, you're carried away from that very, very quickly. Especially, you know, if you're on one of the boats, you can get away up the river or down the river. And, you know, that's part of the experience that was and still is today.
Now, I want to get to know a historical figure that definitely on your radar, Dave. You work the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum. H.H. Bennett, a photographer who really told the world in a lot of ways about the Dells. Could you share some of his story with us?
Oh, geez, where do I start? He came here with his uncle and his brother in 1857 as a teenager. And he was in 1857, right when, you know, the Dells was getting the railroad and kind of coming to be what it was at that time. He got caught up in the fervor of the Civil War. He became a soldier. And during his service in 1864, he was injured. And his right hand was, you know, really injured badly. He came back without a job, didn't know what he was going to do, and he ran into our friend Leroy Gates. And Leroy, besides being this pilot, also ran a little tin-type shop down on one of the corners here on Broadway. And he rented that business to Mr. Bennett, and the legend was born from there. Bennett became a photographer, and along with his wife, did portraits here in the downtown area. And Bennett had this kind of wayward feeling. He had to go out. He couldn't just do these portraits. So he started going up and down the river and doing landscape photos, which really is what he became very famous for in later years.
And those in turn, as I understand it, Dave, helped make the Dells famous.
Right. Bennett was, I think, ahead of his time, he and his family. While his wife, Frankie, ran the studio business, he made sure prints of his photos got onto the railroads that traveled through, the passenger trains, as well as he gave sets of photographs in the form of 3D stereo cards to different libraries so people all around the country could see this wonderful area and want to come see it for themselves.
We're talking to Dave Rambo, site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum, a historical site in Wisconsin Dells. He's with us today to give us some of the early history of the Dells in response to a question we got through our Why Wisconsin project. Up next, we'll fast forward and talk about the rise of water parks and some of the more recent history. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you go to the Dells to this day for your vacations? What's your favorite season to go there? Or do you have memories maybe of going there as a kid? Going there, maybe you grew up there. What was it like living where everybody wanted to be, especially in the summertime? Have you worked there? Do you work there? Do you run a business there? I'd love to hear your piece of Wisconsin Dells history. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk about the history of the Wisconsin Dells in response to a question we got through our Why Wisconsin project. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions, your own memories and experiences of the Dells at 800-642-1234. Dave Rambo stays with us, and now Rhonda Parsham joins us with some recent Dells history. She's Director of Marketing Communications at the Wisconsin Dells Visitor and Convention Bureau. Rhonda, thanks for joining us.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, Dave's been giving us some of the earlier history of Wisconsin Dells. When did we start to see the rise of the water parks that a lot of us associate with the area?
Oh, yes. So water slides first made an appearance in our area back in the 70s. But it wasn't until really the first indoor water park was born in 1989, right here in the Dells, when things really started to get interesting. The fact that we could offer an option to swim, splash, slide down water slides all year long in Wisconsin was a real game changer. And so as more and more water parks were developed, that really gave us a point of differentiation to other Midwest destinations. So we really embraced that as a community and eventually took on that moniker that everyone hears now of the water park capital of the world.
Yeah, I don't know of another contender. Can you remind us why this is a pretty legit title for the Dells, water park capital of the world?
Yeah, so we've got a couple things we can lay claim to. Today, we still have more water parks here of every size per capita than anywhere else on the planet. We have more than 200 water slides, over 16 million gallons of water, and as mentioned, we are home to the United States' first indoor water park, but also home to America's largest outdoor water park, which is Noah's Ark, also America's largest indoor-outdoor combination water park at Wilderness Resort, and also Wisconsin's largest indoor water park at Kalahari Resort. And actually, a fun little tidbit, National Water Park Day was instituted right here in Wisconsin Dells by our own very well-known Kalahari Resorts. So that's a day we love to celebrate each year on July 28th.
And Rhonda, before I let you go, how big a deal is tourism for the local economy today?
It's huge. It's really the backbone of our community. It's not just water slides and attractions, but it boosts our local economy, employs thousands of people, supports infrastructure and education. It also enriches our area businesses and creates economic development throughout our community. So very important.
Rhonda, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rhonda Parsham from the Wisconsin Dells Visitor and Convention Bureau. Dave Rambo stays with us from the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum Historical Site in Wisconsin Dells. Let's go to your calls now with Timothy in Minnesota. Timothy, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Timothy?
I've been going to the Dells since I was a little kid. I grew up about 45 minutes away in Wisconsin Rapids. I think we used to go to Familyland, which I think now is like Zeus themed, but it's across from Noah's Ark. And then as time passed, I started going to Noah's Ark. I think the story I wanted to share was I was surprised going back as an adult because you find, I guess this would be with all sorts of big parks, not just water parks, but you spend time with lots of strangers, you know, lots of other people. And because it's water parks, you see a lot of people as you normally wouldn't see them. And what I was surprised by was you actually see quite a variety of tattoos that you don't see otherwise. So that's kind of a fun, unexpected element of the experience.
I love it. Another angle of people watching. Dave, for the first tourists in Wisconsin Dells, when it first started to get big, 100 years before water slides were a thing,
right,
do we have a lot of memories, letters that they wrote or photos of that first wave of tourists in the Dells area?
We do. Now, handheld photography, you know, where people bring their own cameras, started in like the late 1880s and 1890s. So you see a real boom of that type of photography activity here, where people are taking fun pictures of themselves and their families. That became lean times for people like Mr. Bennett, who did a lot of his work with portraiture.
Mm.
But he kind of shifted gears, and he and his family started doing things, a thing called the penny postcard. And what they did is they took some of his more famous landscapes, converted them into postcard format, and you see a lot of people writing each other, you know, the usual wish you were here. But then others will be writing, you know, really good narratives on what they were doing here in the Dells. And it's really fascinating to read some of that, what was going on 100 years ago.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go to Pam now in Viroqua. Pam, hi.
Hi, Rob. Hey, I have some great memories from the Wisconsin Dells during the 60s.
and I was a kid then, and my parents made a point of getting us up to Wisconsin Dells one weekend every summer. And the big the thing that excited me the most was Fort Dells.
Fort Dells.
Fort Dells was a Fort Dells was a it was a amusement park for kids that wasn't with slides and that kind of stuff. But we had a it was a Western theme, and there was the bad guy Black Bart, and shootouts and things like that. There was a fort that you could run around in.
Interesting. Pab, thanks a lot. I'm guessing that doesn't reflect the Wild West days of Wisconsin Dells of yore. That said, Dave, what were some of the first amenities apart from, you know, those rowboat tours that started to pop up early on?
Of course, you know, cottage industries bloomed where people would come here and they'd have they need a place to stay. And so local people started offering their homes, or more than not, building little cottages up along the bluffs and in the valleys where people could stay. Bennett and his family were kind of an unofficial chamber of commerce at that time. So if you'd come down to his store here on Broadway and ask where some of these amenities were, where could you find a good place to go fishing? Where could you find a good place to stay? Where's the best steak in town? Or something like that. You know, those amenities were available. And, of course, he'd lead you to good friends of his, you know, that he knew that ran some of those things.
Our own Stephanie Elkins from Morning Classics on WPR has some fond memories of the Dells. Here's a listen.
Our teenage nieces and nephews each came to Wisconsin by themselves over the years, and a trip to the Dells became a rite of passage. Racing go-karts, plunging into the river in the ducks, and calling home to beg permission for bungee jumping. But my favorite memories linger from the Tommy Bartlett Thrill Show, enjoying some of the best water skiers in the country as the sun went down, followed by an old-fashioned variety show complete with spinning plates. The kids would relax, light up, and laugh outdoors on perfect summer nights.
That's Stephanie Elkins. And Dave, you know, we've got the water shows now. I didn't realize how far they went back. You mentioned the first water shows was a guy in a top hat on his log raft.
Right.
did we start using the water for entertainment beyond just showing my log rafting skills?
You know, as things grew, we started seeing notable figures that were coming here to take the tours up and down the Wisconsin Dells and on steamboats, which, you know, at one time there were more than three boat companies that were doing business up here. In 1918, they made a law. The business was getting so competitive that they wouldn't let people hawk the tickets on the street. And so they sent their people out to the bridge when you got into town, and they'd jump on the running boards of the cars to see who could be the first to sell the tickets to the boats that were here. We had, at one time, I think in 1881, Buffalo Bill Cody brought his group here. And so this was such a notable place to, you know, for water tourism on the river that, you know, we saw a lot of visitation here for that.
Let's go back to our callers. Kay is with us in Wisconsin Dells. Kay, hi.
Hi. How are you? I grew up in the Dells, then moved away and came back here, and then was editor of the Dells paper for 20 years. The Dells paper, interestingly, was the first business to change its name from Kilborn to Wisconsin Dells, but there are still places in town where you see the Kilborn name, like on the library and the fire department. And also, I had people walk into our office that would say something that they were surprised to see that people live there.
But somebody's got it, right, Kay?
Yes, some of us do. I live out of town, but we do.
Okay, thanks a lot for sharing that. Let's get one more quick call in here. Becky is with us in Hustisford. Becky, hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. My first memories of the Dells go back long before I was born. I grew up in northern Wisconsin, the Ashland area, and my mother and father were from the Superior area. My mother had polio when she was young, And as I was growing up, she would tell me wonderful stories of her experience going to a place called Camp Wabik in the Dells area, which was a very special camp for children with disabilities that allowed them to have a camping experience as rustic as possible. She went there in the late 40s or early 50s, and I looked forward eagerly to visiting the Dells and was very delighted to do so as an adult. Wow. Because of the stories my mother told.
That's a great story. Becky, thanks for that call. And Dave, thanks to you for sharing your stories as well. Really appreciate your time.
Anytime.
That's Dave Rambo, site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum in the Wisconsin Dells, with us today to answer a Why Wisconsin question about the history of the Dells. We also heard from Rhonda Parsham with the Wisconsin Dells Visitors and Convention Bureau. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, new inflation numbers are out. They're still high. We'll find out what's driving prices and the prospects that they might slow down. And you can join in with your thoughts and experiences. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we want to hear from you with your new cooking plans for 2022. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at the latest state and national voting news with debates and lawsuits and more in the works. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. This is the Ideas Network.